Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:38 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 29th. Well, I thought I would start off today with Treasury yields. They're up to 2.69%, but if we look at the decade-long chart, then this is a new recovery high for at least the last 4 years. So this is important that we've seen yields breaking out, and it isn't simply at the longer end of the curve. We can see a very similar trajectory when we look at the shorter end of the curve, because the market is increasingly pricing in the potential that the Federal Reserve is going to be raising interest rates this year. And considering that they didn't think there was practically any chance of that just a few months ago, that they're moving increasingly towards pricing in more. Well, this is a 2-year yield, and the Fed funds rate right now is around 1.5%, so they've already priced in 2 and a bit between now and the beginning of 2020. But the Federal Reserve said they were going to raise 3 times this year, and who knows, they might even raise 4. This is an important chart, because I don't think that looking at 10 years gives us quite enough of gives this just how much it fell enough justice. We have an upward trajectory, there's a very clear rounding characteristic, and the outlook is for higher interest rates over the short and indeed the medium term. Is it somewhat overbought in the short term? Yes, but it is also coming from way behind the curve. And in normal circumstances, we'd say this is a short-term overbought condition, but the reality is that for at least the 2 year, that considering that they've only just priced in 2 interest rate hikes over the next 2 years, then there is ample potential for additional upside here before we get anywhere close to some acceptance of what the Fed says as being close to what they're actually going to do. And of course, the Federal Reserve was wrong on so many occasions over the last decade. They kept saying they were going to raise interest rates, and they never did it. But they've raised rates 3 times now, and the market is finally beginning to take them seriously. And I think that is helping to get into the calculations of what investors might think of from the future. Well, obviously, one of the reasons that the Federal Reserve is thinking about raising interest rates is because we are about, the USA is about to embark upon deficit spending, and there is a clear acceleration in the Dow Jones. Now, it was in negative territory today by about 150 points, but in the context of an index that is currently trading at 26,400 and change, that's really not very much. Nevertheless, we have to also pay attention to the fact that acceleration is a trend ending, but there's no sign of it ending just yet, and it's likely to end in a clear downward dynamic. And I think that that is really quite likely to be associated with an uptick in volatility. Now, the point I've been making on a number of occasions for much of the last few months is that the VIX index, because it has been so inert, is increasingly susceptible or I think sensitive to even minor changes in the stock market. So it was up over 2 full points in here today, despite the fact that the Dow Jones, or the S&P for that matter, was down less than 1%. In fact, if I simply just get you the correct figure, the S&P 500 was down less than half of 1%, and yet we've had this move on the VIX index, which just helps to ram home the point that this is an index that is susceptible to some pause of consolidation, and not least because of the fact that these kinds of moves, which are contributing to these accelerating patterns, where relative to what the market has done in the last decade, it is now going vertical and increasingly taking on parabolic proportions. So the first clear downward dynamic is likely to signal a pause of at least short-term significance. But we also have to look at the size of the reactions, because when a market goes up like this, some people will have the trailing stops. And where would people have their trailing stops? Well, the size of the reactions from about September has got progressively smaller, but by and large, they have been in the order of about 150 points. And that has been the case for the last 4 or 5 months, and therefore 150 points from 7,000 and change would take us down into the 6850 level for the NASDAQ 100. And we can do a similar exercise for a considerable number of the other indices that are accelerating to new highs at present. And of course, the fact that these indices are being led higher by the largest cap shares in the indices, well, what that contributes to is a momentum move, and it's most particularly a momentum move for these ETFs. So ETF investing has trumped just about everything else because the market has done nothing but go up, and anyone who has been running a hedging strategy of any way, shape or form has underperformed. The only way to outperform this market has been to be leveraged and to be unwaveringly bullish. So that has contributed to the acceleration, because that way of dealing with the market has become accepted, and now we're entering the third psychological perception stage. In fact, I think it's no longer appropriate to say that we're entering it. We are in the third psychological perception stage of this bull market, where we're seeing an increasing number of accelerating trends. And we saw perhaps the first sign of some pause coming into the Chinese market today. The A-share index was down in a dynamic fashion, and that is a downside Q reversal. And if it follows through on the downside in here tomorrow, well, then that will suggest that we've had a peak of at least near-term significance. Now, the H-share index was also off its high in here today, but not nearly as in as dynamic a fashion. And when we look at that on the weekly basis, well, we can see that the 14,000 level has been an area of resistance on multiple occasions since about 2008. So it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we get some pause in this region, which would allow the short-term overbought condition to be unwound. Then when we look at the Indian market, well, it has continued to power on to new highs. Now, I think when we compare that to the performance, for example, on the H shares, yes, we have a short-term overbought condition, but it isn't nearly as wide as it is on the H shares. Nevertheless, eventually this accelerating market is going to encounter some resistance, and then the likelihood of a reversion back to the mean will increase quite substantially. The dollar was a little bit firmer in here today. And that resulted in some softness in the commodities markets, but the dollar was not able to hold on to all of its advanced intraday. Nevertheless, when we look at it on the weekly basis, we can see clearly that there is a short-term oversold condition. So it's not, I think when, rather than thinking about it as not beyond the bounds of possibility, it's increasingly likely that we're going to get at least some pause of consolidation, that the dollar has already had quite a large move, and that it is due some pause in here. Now, the pound, which has been soaring higher for much of the last few weeks, has pulled back a bit in here today. It's still above the 140 area, and it is really quite overbought relative to the trend mean. So it is, I think, susceptible now to some pause and consolidation, and not least because there is continued strife about exactly which way the negotiations are going to go, and the House of Lords is going to introduce their own conditions into the exit bill that's coming before them. What it means, of course, is that regardless of what is eventually negotiated, Parliament is going to have more of a say. And what that suggests is that we are probably going to get less uncertainty while they're negotiating it, and then probably more uncertainty when it comes to Parliament actually voting for it. I think that the Brexit negotiations are going to continue to represent a sign of volatility for the markets. But because the pound was a little bit softer in here today, well, then the FTSE 100 was one of the few markets, in fact, that was in positive territory. Then when we look at the oil market, it has been ranging around this $70 area, and it pulled back from it in here today. So far, this has been really quite a mild or shallow consolidation in the region of a rather large psychological level at $70. But Oil hasn't pulled back by more than $5 in at least 7 months now, and it would need to at least do that to question the consistency of the overall advance. And gold prices were also a little bit softer in here today. And I think that when we look at it on the weekly basis, we can see that it did rather race to get up to this level, and that it does have plenty of room in which to consolidate, but that consolidation is looking likely, and that it will probably be a more interesting bullish bet, within the next few months following that consolidation. It will need to sustain a move up and out of this range to confirm a return to demand dominance. And it's a pretty similar story for platinum and silver, although silver was down in a more dynamic fashion relative to gold in here today. It really does need to break above $18 to really break that. It's a very choppy range, but there is clearly a downward bias within it. Then I think what's quite interesting is the fact that the food commodities have pretty much sat out the recovery in the broad commodity markets. But wheat is now trading back above the trend mean, and if it can sustain that move, well then we can begin to argue that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. It has been uncharacteristically inert around this $4 area for a year and a half already. So I think that's beginning to show signs of life, and rough rice has been ranging pretty much below the $13 level now for almost 3 full years, and it is firming from the region of the trend mean. And as long as it is holding at that region, I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But when we look at corn or soybeans, or indeed coffee or cocoa, well, what we're presented with are trendless environments, which have been really quite volatile. And even cocoa, which had initially looked like it would be able to sustain the move above the trend mean, failed there, and now it's pulling back again from that 2000 area. So I think that when we look at all of these food commodities, the world has done frightfully well at supplying the global population with plenty of food. But the global population's expanding, and living standards are improving for the major population centers, and per capita calorie consumption is increasing as well. So what that is doing is it will slowly but surely gnaw away at the surplus. And considering that prices are already low, it does rather make the food sector susceptible to surprises on the upside, and most particularly if we do get these kinds of events like floods or droughts that can impact supplies. The one thing I think that has been a headline that has been made over multiple occasions in the last few years has been that stockpiles are low by historical standards. So while supply is abundant right now, that needn't necessarily always be the case, and the food commodities are I think, an under-owned asset class, and for good reason so far, but nonetheless worth keeping an eye on. Now, when we start to bring it all together, then commodities generally are returning to dominance. For example, and part of the reason for that is because we have this return of synchronized global economic expansion. The luxury goods sector has also returned, or at least broken its downtrend, and is back on I think, a support building footing with an outlook to further improvement. It's really then quite a similar story for the biotechnology sector, which the Nasdaq biotech sector is very large cap weighted. But then we're starting to see that a significant number of the smaller companies, particularly those that are leveraged to immuno-oncology, continue to complete their bases and are running on the upside in here. And all of these particular factors are representative of leverage to the both synchronized global economic expansion and the nature of cyclical markets, that it is cyclical sectors tend to do best in the latter stages of a medium-term bull market. And that's exactly what we're getting in here right now. And of course, banks are also squarely in that particular sector. So the S&P 500 banks index is now looking quite overextended, and the Eurozone's banking index, it might still be in this long-term range, but it does continue to improve. And then when you look at, for example, something like Standard Chartered, which doesn't have a retail branch operation in the UK, but it is a truly emerging market bank, where it makes most of its money in China, but then it's got substantial African and Middle Eastern operations as well, and as well as being an ASEAN bank. And it has a strikingly similar pattern to Swatch, which isn't in the same sector at all, other than the fact that they're both leveraged to global economic expansion. And so what this tells us is that it is these cyclical sectors that have got the catch-up potential in here right now, whereas it is the clear technology mega caps are leading the acceleration higher. And I think with that, I will leave it for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.